الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله. All praise due to Allah and may Allah's peace and blessings be on the last messenger of Allah. This evening's topic is first things first. This topic, first things first, recently expressed by Stephen Covey, deals with the issue of prioritizing, that this principle is an essential principle for planning anything. And planning, as we all know, is really an essential practice for achieving one's goals. Whatever we plan to do, we will likely be successful in doing it, utilizing the minimum amount of effort, whereas trying to do something without planning causes us to expend a lot of effort and produces very little results. We all know about it, having been students, or currently being students, cramming the night before the exam. You put all your maximum effort in there, but what is the end result in that exam? Very little. Whereas they have shown, while on one hand, an unplanned environment, 80% of effort produces 20% of results. Whereas in a planned environment, 20% of effort produces 80% results. So this issue of planning is something which is known to the world. In recent times, it's been analyzed and taken apart into and looked at all its various components, but it's been around for a long time. As far as human beings have been on the face of the earth, the concept of planning has always been there. The point, though, when we look at the issue of planning, for Muslims, we understand that this is something essential for the religion and for our lives. There being no separation ultimately between religion and life anyway, planning, according to the management gurus, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail, is a reality. And even in the Quran, for example, in the 32nd chapter, verse 5, we find Allah Almighty saying there, يُدَبِّرُ الْأَمْرَ مِنَ السَّمَاءِ إِلَى الْأَرْضِ, that He plans the affairs of the heavens and the earth. This is one of His names, Al-Mudabbir. So when we look at the names of Allah, we look at them not just from the perspective of glorifying God, but also from seeing how those names can be reflected in our own lives. So this issue of planning is something critical. First things first is addressing the basic concept of planning. Now, in terms of planning, the first principle that has been identified commonly is that of setting one's goals. Because when you, in life, look around, there are many different things you want to do, you'd like to achieve, but we have to be clear as to what is the main goal. The human being is both spiritual as well as material. So there are goals which are spiritual goals and goals which are material goals. Which ones do we prioritize? Which one becomes the main goal? We are in this world for a limited period of time, 80 years, 70 years. And then, as we understand, our soul, our spiritual side continues. It came into existence before our presence in this physical world, and it continues after our physical presence appears to have ended. So it would seem that since the longer period is that spiritual period, then our greatest concern should be focused in that period. And we find one of the Prophet's companions by the name of Zayd ibn Thabit quoting him as saying, with regards to priorities and goals in life, he laid down this principle 1,400 years ago, and it is a principle, no doubt, which God taught Adam and all the prophets afterwards. He said, "Man kanat ad-dunya hamma, farraqa Allahu alayhi amra." Whoever's greatest concern is this world, Allah will scatter his or her affairs. Whoever's greatest concern, their focus, is this world, then Allah will scatter their affairs. They'll be running after the things of this world and never being satisfied. As the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, had said, if any of the descendants of Adam were given a valley of gold, they would want another one. That's how we are. You know, we're never satisfied. The grass is always greener on the other side. So, this is human reality. When focused on this world, we run around, as they say, from pillar to post, like a chicken without a head, you know, all over the place. That is life. People are just running around. And they will not find, things don't fall into place. Everything doesn't fit into the groove or the path that's desired. And the Prophet went on to say, وَجَعَلَ فَقْرَهُ بَيْنَ عَيْنَيْهِ. And Allah would place poverty between his or her eyes. The person who is focused on this world, running after it, chasing it everywhere, will never be satisfied, as we said. And in fact, no matter how much they gather of this world, they will always be staring at poverty. No matter how much they gather, how rich they get, it doesn't give them happiness. It doesn't give them peace of mind, of soul, of spirit. In fact, when we look into the lives of the rich and the super rich, we see all kinds of madness going on there. In fact, when we consider those people with the most, what it tends to bring out in them is distrust of everybody else. Normally, when you see somebody and you smile, it's just in recognition, you smile at them. And the Prophet said, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, smiling is charity. So we're encouraged to smile. Smile at others when you meet people. Don't meet them with a sour face. Meet them with a smile. You know, it causes others to smile. It's like something contagious, and it's a good thing. Brings out a good feeling. And when somebody smiles at you, normally you feel good, so you smile back. But for the person who's focused on this world, when somebody smiles at him or her, they think, what do they want? They want some of my money. You know, that's how they're going to judge everything. They're going to see everybody as just trying to find one way. They're just trying to ingratiate themselves to you so they can get a hold of your money. So you can't trust anybody. So this is the state that you enter into. And you see those people, you know, they're very famous, super rich individuals, multi-billionaires, and you see how they ended up living as recluses, hidden away, not wanting to see anybody, not wanting to know anybody.
Yeah.
Why? This is the consequence when this world becomes one's focus. And in fact, a few years ago, 2009, in March, a 74-year-old German industrialist who was considered to be the 47th richest person on the earth. He had $14 billion. You know, in 2009, the banks crashed in the U.S. And that financial crisis spread out of the U.S. and hit the rest of the world. When it hit Germany, this man, this industrialist, lost $9 billion in 1 week. He lost $9 billion in 1 week. What did he do? He went home, sat at his desk, pulled out his drawer, pulled out his silver-plated revolver, and blew his brains out. This is a man, 74 years old. He's lived a whole life, you know, as an industrialist, running, setting up companies, etc., etc. All the years of experience didn't teach him how to handle this crisis. From being the 47th richest person on the face of the earth, according to Fortune 500, his treasure or his wealth of $14 billion was reduced to $5 billion. He lost nine. All he could see was the loss of nine. He couldn't see the five that was left. You know how much you would have to spend every day of your life, if you live for 80 years, how much you'd have to spend every day in order to consume $5 billion? You'd have to spend $20,000 every single day of your life. This man, in spite of that massive amount of wealth, takes his life. Poverty was in front of him, between his eyes. That's all he could see. That loss. And you see it around. We hear stories about it all the time. People lose something. It's not everything. Life isn't all gone. But yet, they commit suicide. They do crazy things. People lose their jobs. What do? A trend started, this postman syndrome, where this American postman lost his job. He went home, got his Kalashnikov, came back to the office, and started mowing down the people. Then somebody else did it, and another person, and it just became all over the place. People were doing it. So they had to get psychiatrists into workplaces to teach people how to deal with stress and how to deal with, you know, losses. And because the focus is on this world. And this world cannot be trusted. It can be with you today and it can be gone tomorrow. That is the nature of this world. And that is why the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, had said this: whoever makes this world his or her goal, their affairs will be scattered. They will be running all over the place. They will see poverty between their eyes, and in the end, what happens in the end? وَلَمْ يَأْتِهِ مِنَ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا مَا كَتَبَ اللَّهُ لَهُ. And he or she will only get from this world what God had already written for them. They're not going to get any more. Meaning, the affairs is in the hands of God anyway. All the running around and efforts and so on, so it's with God whether you get or you don't get in the end. On the other hand, من كانت الآخرة نيته جمع الله له أمره. But whoever makes the next world his goal, his intention or her intention, then Allah will bring their affairs together. Everything just seems to fall into place, slots into place. The direction is clear. Because we've understood what this life is about, and that it is really only a bridge to a greater life. So we don't get wiped out by the changes that happen in this world around us, because we're clear as to what the goal is. Furthermore, وَجَعَلَ غِنَاهُ فِي قَلْبِي. And Allah will place richness in his heart or in her heart. And as the Prophet ﷺ had said, لَيْسَ الْغِنَى مِنْ كَثْرَةُ الْأَرْضِ لَكِنَّ الْغِنَى غِنَى النَّفْسِ. That true wealth, true richness, is not in the accumulation of many commodities. The true wealth is wealth of the soul. It's wealth of the soul. Wealth of the soul which comes with the acceptance of God in one's life as the true Lord, creator, sustainer, maintainer of this world. It is in that acceptance that one has a sense of peace of mind and heart. It is the remembrance of God about which the Quran speaks, saying, "Ala bidhikri Allahi tatma'inna al-qulub." It is only with the remembrance of Allah, of God, that hearts find rest. So that peace and contentment, that rest, which comes with that awareness and consciousness of Allah, that is something which cannot be bought. Money will not purchase it. It is only when we have paid our spiritual dues that we earn it. So Allah will place in the heart of that individual whose focus is on the life to come, that richness, where he or she will always see the better side of things. That there's always good in whatever happens. Because that consciousness of God, this is what it gives us. An ability to interpret the events of our lives in a positive way, which helps us to grow as human beings in this world, to grow closer and closer to God. So the Prophet, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, had said that the affair of the true believer is an amazing thing. And it is only in the case of the true believer. Whenever good times come to the true believer, he or she is grateful to God, to Allah. And Allah rewards him for it. And whenever difficult times, evil times, calamities strikes, the true believer is patient. And Allah rewards the true believer for their patience. So that's where our life is, isn't it? It's either between getting what we wanted, a blessing, or not getting what we wanted, a loss. What happens to people is that when they get what they want, they forget God and are just taken out by themselves. They feel, what I did, look what I did. I'm so great, I'm wonderful, you know, look what I've achieved. And they become big-headed. And when they lose, you know, they have to blame somebody. It's his fault, it's this one's fault, her fault. And when they can't find anybody to blame and it ends up coming back to them, then that's when they pull the gun out and say, okay, my fault. So they cannot handle the changes of life. That consciousness of God gives them that even keel. It's not to say that we don't, you know, have some difficulty in both circumstances, true believer. Sure. As human beings, they will have difficulties. But it won't knock them out of the pocket. Just they go crazy one way or go crazy the other way. No. Not to those extremes. You know, you'll be shaking a bit, but okay. Get your footing again. Shaking a bit, but get your footing again. That's what comes with the consciousness of God. Where one's goal is clear, that it is the life to come, then the consciousness gives them that even and balanced approach to life in this world. And the Prophet ﷺ went on to say, وَأَتَتْهُ الدُّنْيَا وَهِيَ رَاغِمَةً. And the world will come to him or her submissively. There will be ample opportunity to benefit from the things of this world. It will be there, just open for him or her. But of course, they will only take from it what is necessary. Not go crazy, oh, this is available, I'm going to try and grab everything that I can. No. They will take from it what is in fact really necessary. So, in prioritizing what comes first, whether it is the world that we live in and the things of this world, or it is the world to come, the Akhirah, one or the other, it is clear from this instruction, this guidance of the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, that what comes first should be the Akhirah, the world to come. The second point, in terms of our planning, requires us to determine what are the prerequisites to succeed in this goal, the goal of the life to come. The basic prerequisites was given by God to Adam, the very first human being created, himself and his wife, Eve. They were given Islam. Islam is the basic prerequisite to be successful in this life as well as the life to come. And that is why all of the prophets of God, the true prophets of God, they had only one religion. As there is only one God, one world, and he has created one set of human beings, this thing we call races and tribes and nations, etc., these are non-critical distinctions, characteristics which are not primary, they're very secondary things. We are one race, the human race. There is no Negroid, Caucasoid, Mongoloid, and that is all nonsense. It's stuff people made up. We are one race, the human race. That's the reality. And as such, God gave human beings one religion. No need to give a bunch of different religions which contradict themselves, this one saying this and that one saying that and the other. No, this is not from God. This is from human beings. They changed the teachings of the prophets. They're the ones who modified the messages to suit their own desires or intentions, etc. So there was only one message, Islam. All prophets of God were Muslims. So, knowing that Islam is the prerequisite, then we have to look at the various requirements of Islam. We have Islam has five pillars in terms of practices, and it has six pillars in terms of faith, pillars of faith. We have to determine, looking at the practices, which one should be first, which one is primary. And of course, the most primary one is Salah. It is the five times daily prayer. That is most primary. That is most critical. That is the link between human being, the human being, and God. So that is the one which we have to focus on the most and make sure it is in place. Because everything else after that depends on it. Everything after that depends on it. If it's intact, if it's in place, if it's correct, then everything else will be fine. If it's not, if it's messed up, part-time, half-time, Friday Muslims, Ramadan Muslims, you know, then all the other stuff doesn't work. Everything else is all shaky, it doesn't fit. So it has to start from there. And we have to know that this organization of the day, dividing up the day into five parts, organizing the day around our spiritual need to be in contact with God. It's not for God's need. God doesn't have the need of our prayers. This is our need. We do need to organize our day around the worship of God. That everything else fits in the slots that are left from those times of worship. So we're always going back to worship of God. That is the primary state. So knowing that, then that's what we have to work on. I know some people will say, well, non-Muslims say, well, you know, we pray to God when our heart feels God. You know, so we turn and we pray to Him and we really into that prayer because, you know, we're thinking about God. That thing is there, so the link is there. But you all, you Muslims, you pray like robots. You know, five times in a day. Get up in the morning, pray. Midday, pray. Afternoon, pray. You know, sunset, pray. Before you go to bed, pray. You know, this where's the heart? But we say, yeah, it sounds reasonable. That it's good to pray to God when everyone feels that good feeling. It's good to do that too. But if that's the only time we pray to God, and we don't get that feeling today, then we don't pray today. If we don't get that feeling this week, then we don't pray this week. Then this month. Then a year. And years will go by, we don't pray, until what happens? Calamity strikes. That's when everybody runs back, oh God, oh God, oh God. You know? Sincerest prayers are then, right? This is, calamity has struck. But that kind of prayer, it doesn't mean anything. Really, before God, everybody will do that. Imagine the atheist who was standing on the top floor of the Twin Towers when the planes hit and the building is going. What do you think they were saying? Oh God, oh God, oh God! Screaming. You know? Even louder than the Christians that were there, right? Oh God, oh God, oh God! Because nothing else, what is? You see, the whole building is going down. Yeah, that's it. There's no way out. So, if even the atheist will do it at that time, then it means that type of prayer then doesn't have real value. Doesn't have real value. The real value is to establish that worship. That's why the Quran says, "Aqim as-salah," establish the prayer, "lidhikri," in order to remember me. That is it. That is the goal. To keep that remembrance, that consciousness of God throughout one's day. So here, and we can go through the rest of the pillars of Islam. Of course, time doesn't really permit us to do that. But we need to attack or to approach the principles of Islam with this kind of approach. Prioritizing, putting what is primary and what is secondary in their proper place. Because if we do what is secondary, when we should be doing what is primary, we're wasting time. We're wasting time. Some people, for example, even, you know, on a technical point, if you have something which is obligatory and something which is recommended, then you do the obligatory thing. That comes first. That is priority. So for example, in the early morning prayer, Fajr, when you come into the mosque and the Iqamah has been given for the Fard, the obligatory prayer, then for you to go and do Sunnah prayers, it's not correct. It's not correct. Some people do it, feeling that it's very important, but it's not as important as the Fard. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ had said, whenever the Iqamah is given for the obligatory prayer, no other prayer is acceptable but that obligatory prayer. That's prioritizing. The obligatory is given priority over the recommended. So we have to approach the religion and all aspects of the religion in the same way. In terms of parents, for example, priority in terms of their children is to raise them highly educated, intelligent, super sophisticated individuals? Or is the real goal to raise them righteous Muslims? Point. For a lot of parents, this is confused. They're not clear as to really what the goal is. So they will sacrifice this principle of raising righteous children for the dunya, for being a top doctor, lawyer, engineer, etc. Sacrificing the spiritual life of that child for the material world. Of course, if we're able to bring two things together, then it's a good thing. But if we ever have to make a choice between the two, and I hear it when people talk about Islamic schools and public schools. Well, the Islamic school, the standard of education is this, that, and the other. But the public school, or the non-Muslim private school, you know, this is top of the line, they got the top of the line teachers, etc., etc. And I'm concerned about my child's future. What future? Future in this world. So I'm going to take my child out of the Islamic school, or I won't even put them in the Islamic school, and put them in this other school. This is actually spiritual suicide that we're doing to our children. Where are our priorities? They're upside down. If the kid goes to Islamic school, they graduate, and their academics happen to be weak, we can always get tutors to help them fix it. But if they go through the government schools or other private schools, Catholic school or whatever, and their Islam becomes weak, messed up, you bring Maulana, Sheikh, to come and try and fix it, you can't fix it now. This kid is a graduate from high school. They have their own way of thinking, their own mind now. You try to tell them, Allah, Prophet, the Quran, please. I heard it. I hear you. Talk to the hand. Whatever. You know, you've lost them. You can't fix it. So we have to be clear about priorities. Similarly, when we come to marriage, is another big issue in the community, marriage. We all know the well-known hadith of the Prophet, in which he said, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, a woman and a man is married for four reasons. Beauty, wealth, family status, and piety. He said what? Choose the pious one and you'll be successful. That is the criterion. Piety. That comes before all. And that's why the Prophet ﷺ also had said that if a young man comes to you as a father, seeking the hand of your daughter, and you're satisfied with his religiosity, that he's a religious guy, he's a pious guy, and his character, because of course he might appear to be a pious guy, but he's got bad character. Oh. Okay, that means just appearances, it's not the person. Right? He needs these two, because good character is a product of real piety. Bad character is a product of a lack of piety. So these are signs. But if that person comes to you and seeks the hand of your daughter, and she agrees, then if you don't marry them, there will be corruption in the land. There will be corruption throughout the land. So this is the criterion. But if we said that the goal is to raise righteous children, are you going to raise those righteous children with an unrighteous wife? See, obviously these two come together. The priority for parents is to raise righteous children. They themselves have to be pious. They have themselves to be righteous. You have to be what you want your children to become. If you're not what you want your children to become, they're going to be like you. That's how children are, for the most part. So, this is an issue again of prioritizing. Also, if we look at the school situation, when we go into schools, many of us here are studying in universities, etc., we have to put this university education in the proper context. From the Western perspective, you know, we as Muslim students are not the same as non-Muslim students. The Muslim student is a Muslim who happens to be a student, and not a student who happens to be a Muslim. These are two different individuals altogether. They're using the same two words, Muslim student. But in one case, it's a Muslim who happens to be a student. He could have been something else. He could have been a teacher. He could have been a cab driver. He could have been anything else. He's a Muslim first. Whereas the student who happens to be a Muslim, he is indistinguishable from Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, atheists. He's just a student. His Islam is of no consequence. It has no impact on his or her life. So he will do the things that students normally do. What do? Cheat. Students are known for cheating. Universities have to set up all these different means and to stop these guys from cheating. Because what? As a student, your goal is to get top marks by any means necessary. That's the nature. Right? If you can get away with it, then you did it. So you will cheat. You will take other people's, you know, plagiarize you. Anything. Whereas the Muslim student, he or she will not do that. They will approach their education in a different, from a different perspective. It is to do as good as you can, because it is true the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, had said, "Inna Allah yuhibbu min ahadikum idha amila amalan an yutqina." That Allah loves, God loves from each and every one of you. If you do anything, you do it to the best of your ability. You do it to the best of your ability. So Muslims should really be outstanding students. It's not enough to say, well, you know, I'm a good Muslim, I pray 5 times a day, but you know, the study thing is just too much for me, I really can't handle it, you know, the teacher is a disbeliever, and you know. No, this is not an excuse. And these students, you know, they'll come to me the day before the exam, they'll call me up, "Sheikh, is there a dua, you know, a dua that should get us through the exam?" I hear it all the time, right around exam time. I have to, no, there's no special dua. No special prayer that's going to get you through this exam. If you didn't prepare yourself, then be ready for the consequence. So, we as students, a Muslim student, entering to university, we are not entering for, as the West likes to say, the university experience. You know, after having gone through junior high, high school, now you get the university experience. No, we're not going there for the experience. We're going there for a particular purpose. We should be clear on what we're going there to study. And what we're going to study should be something beneficial to the community. Because the Prophet ﷺ had said, "Khayrun nas anfa'uhum linnas." The best of people are those most beneficial to people. So we are seeking beneficial, useful knowledge. We should be clear. As a Muslim student, there are boundaries as to what you can take and what you can focus and study and what you can't. As a Muslim, for example, going into medicine, popular field, it is not appropriate for a male Muslim to study as his or her, his specialization, gynecology. This is not acceptable. So any of you brothers that are in gynecology, you better get out of there now. Know it. Islamically, this is not acceptable. No matter what field of medicine you study, you will learn something of that. To have that knowledge where emergencies arise, you can help to deal with situations, fine. But to make that your focus, what is that saying? What is that saying? It's not acceptable. Yes, for a Muslim female, yes, focus on gynecology. That's the area that you should focus on, yes. But she doesn't go and focus on, you know, male urinary, you know, dysfunctions. No, that's not a field. That's not a field for her to study, to focus on. I mean, of course, in the course of medicine, you study everything, a little bit of everything. But when you're going to specialize, for you to specialize in that, no, not appropriate. So we do have, see, as a student who happens to be a Muslim, you don't think of these things. You think of what, where is the most money? You know, cosmetic surgery, this is the one. Ah, that's what I want to be. No. As a Muslim student, that's not how you think. It isn't just about the dunya here. It's about utilizing your profession when you graduate in a way which is pleasing to Allah. So that your utilization of that profession becomes ibadah. It becomes worship. Furthermore, we have to keep in mind the last of the principles for planning, and that is the time frame in which we have to do all of this. The issue of time and time management. We have a period of time that's given to us. We don't know exactly how long it is, but we do know about the time that we are actually in. So we have to deal with that time as if that's all the time we actually have. Meaning, we have to maximize our benefit from every portion of time that we have. We cannot afford to go on holidays. Actually, this whole idea of holidays is not from the Islamic world. In Islam, for the last 1,400 years, Muslims did not have holidays. I know it might seem strange now because we've grown up with this idea of weekend, holiday, you know, Friday or Saturday, Sunday, end of school, 2 months break, holiday. But no, in Islam, really, there is no holiday. There's no such thing. Because life is worship. From the Muslim perspective, Islamic perspective, life is worship. As Allah said, قُلْ إِنَّ صَلَاتِي وَنُسُكِي وَمَحْيَايَ وَمَمَاتِي لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. Say, indeed, my prayers, my sacrifices, my living and my dying are for Allah, the Lord of all the worlds. So as a Muslim, everything I do becomes ibadah. If whatever I do is done with a consciousness of God and done in accordance with the teachings of the religion of God, as found in the Quran or from the Sunnah or the way of Prophet Muhammad, may God's peace and blessings be upon him. So the whole life becomes ibadah. And that's why Allah said in the Quran, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ. If you finish worshipping, then you shift to another form of worshipping. You go from one form of worshipping to another form of worshipping. Your whole life is shifting in that way. There is no holiday from worship. If worship is the remembrance of God, can we take a holiday from remembering God? No. It's not possible. Not acceptable. People do it, but it's not acceptable. We should strive to be conscious of God. As long as we are conscious, we are awake and conscious, we should be aware, conscious of God in what we say, what we do, what we listen to, etc. So there is really no holiday. This holiday thing came from the West. And the West took it from where? From the East, from Judaic tradition of the Sabbath, the day of rest. Based on the idea that God, after creating the world in 6 days, He had to take a rest. So He took a rest on the seventh. Then, that was handed over to Greco-Roman civilization through Paul as he changed the religion that Jesus brought, which was originally Islam. He changed the day of rest, his followers, changed the day of rest to what? To Sunday. That became the day of rest. Why? Because the Romans, who were the rulers of the time, the Romans' most popular object of worship, their most popular idol, was Apollo. Apollo, who was the sun god. They believed he used to ride across the sky in a chariot, pulling the sun from one end to the other. He was the sun god. He was also the son of the main god. So he was the son of the main god. Main god had a wife. He had brothers. He had, you know, the whole family of gods, right? But anyway, the point is, he was the main god, and this was his son. So they were trying to promote this idea of Jesus being the Son of God. Of course, they had another twist on it because he was the Son of God who was himself. Right? So, this idea still, you know, was more acceptable and palatable for the Romans if they said, let's make the day of worship instead of Saturday, Sunday, which was the day for the worship of the sun god. And that's what Sunday means. Monday is the day of worship for the moon god. Actually, all the days of the week, according to Western tradition, are named after days of worship of their gods. If you didn't know, know now. Anyway, the point is that this was a particular process which had a historical origin based in idolatry. And when the West industrialized and workers got rights, then they had to have some days of rest based on this tradition of Sabbath and resting. So they said Saturday, Sunday. And when they colonized the Muslim world and spread control, then they introduced this idea of weekend, days of rest. But in Islam, really, what do we have? We have Friday, but is Friday holiday? No. Friday is not a holiday. Friday, according to the Quran, Allah tells you, if the adhan is called, then go to the prayer. Stop whatever you're doing and go to the prayer. Once the prayer is over, then go out and seek God's bounty in the earth. Continue your business. Go on to do something else. It's not a holiday. So we don't have holidays, technically. So, knowing that, we have to value our time. We have to put a premium on this time. Time is critical. So much so that Allah named a surah, or gave us a surah, whose name was Al-Asr. Time. Wal-Asr. Inna al-insana lafi khusr. This small chapter at the end of the Quran, by time, all of humanity is in a state of loss. Except those who believe and do righteous deeds. And advise each other to be truthful, to accept the truth, to live by the truth. وَتَوَاسَوْ بِالصَّبْرِ. And to be patient. Patient with the trials of this life, whether of good or of evil. And as Imam Shafi'i had said, if Allah had only revealed that surah alone, that chapter alone, it should have been enough for humankind to be guided. So this is the issue of time. How do we utilize our time? Do we waste it? If we talk about time to kill, right? We have time to kill? You got some time to kill? Kill what? This whole concept, you know, we have this whole thing about how we deal with time. You spend time, buy time. This time is to be utilized in a way which is pleasing to God. Every moment every second we are responsible for. As the Prophet ﷺ had said, on the day of judgment when we are resurrected, that no one will move from the place until they answer, what did they do in the time of their lives? That time which God gave, how did we utilize that time? We'll have to answer for it. Every moment, every second of our lives, we will have to answer for. There was no holiday. It was a trick. Satanic trick. So, if we go back to our beginning thought, that of first things first, we said that this is addressing fundamentally planning. That we have to plan our lives. Everything that we have to do in this life should be in accordance with a plan. Alhamdulillah, Islam provides the plan. It's not that we have to go and crack our heads and worry and think and philosophize and no, it's there. What we need to do, the guidelines are there so we can plan the whole of our lives. It gives us that clarity. That is Islam. So, this is what is required of us, that we put Islam first in our lives, make it first. And of course, there is a big struggle happening out there in the world today. Because those of us who have ended up in the West, there is this issue right now in front of us about assimilation and integration. The West wants Muslims to be, for example, Germans first. You're a German. You talk German. You dress like a German. You walk like a German. You think like a German. But you can still be a Muslim in your back pocket. That's what they want. If you're like that, you're fine. That's the kind of Muslim we like. But now, if you're the kind of Muslim which says, no, you know, Muslim is different. German thing is just a happens thing, you know, we just happen to be here. But no, we are Muslims first. Islam comes first. Islam is our priority, then hey, this is a terrorist. This is a terrorist. That's terroristic thinking. Fundamentalist, Salafist, Wahhabist, all kinds of names. All of this. This is a struggle that is going on. This is the cultural clash that Huntington talked about. It's happening. It's real. This is the struggle. And the only way that we will prevail is to put first things first. So I ask Allah, most gracious, most merciful, to help us to accept Him as the first and most important thing in our lives, and to make Islam the priority of our lives, and to be clear about what is most important and what is not. And to live in accordance with that correct understanding. Barakallahu feekum. Assalamu alaikum.